call the House Committee on Business, Labor, and Consumer Affairs to order, and we'll open a work session on House Bill 3440, and Janet, can you review it with us again?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 3440 is Representative Schaffler's bill, and it would exempt unemployment benefits from state personal income tax, applying to unemployment benefits paid after January 1st, 2006, and for which an exemption is claimed for tax years beginning that year. Mr. Chair, if you'll recall, last week, 3440-1 includes the level, it would be a means test for this exemption, and there are blanks in lines 12 and lines 14, and that was the reason for bringing the bill back today, was to fill in those blanks. This bill does have a subsequent referral to the Revenue Committee. And Representative Schaffler, I don't know if you have...
Oh, Mr. Chair, I think what I'd like to do, if the committee agrees, is put $20,000 in the single and $30,000 in the joint and send it over to Revenue, and they can work their magic.
So it's $20,000 in the single and $30,000 in the joint?
Yes, sir.
And those blank spaces there.
And, Mr. Chair, that would be line 14 would be $20,000 and line 12 would be $30,000 in that dash one amendment.
In the dash one amendment.
That's $21,000, Mr. Chair.
Representative Schaffler, you want to make a motion then on adopting the...
Yes. What was that? Mr. Chair, I move we adopt the dash one to House Bill 3440 with $30,000 written in on line 12 and $20,000 written in on line 14.
Representative Schaffler moves that we adopt the dash ones to House Bill 3440. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Holden.
I will be voting for this, but I would rather see $25,000 as a minimum and $35,000 for a joint. Just doesn't seem like very much money to me, but just thought I'd make that point.
Thank you. Representative, but it's too late now. I've already written in an eight. What's in there? Is there any other discussion? Is there any objection? Dash ones are adopted. Representative Schaffler.
Mr. Chair, I move we send House Bill 3440 as amended to Revenue. For the new pass recommendation.
Representative Schaffler moves that we that House Bill 3440 as amended be referred to the Committee on Revenue. Is there any discussion? Representative Kitts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was wondering if Representative Schaffler could state for the committee what exactly the dollar amounts at $20,000 and $30,000 jointly equate to.
Well, since we split it up, I can't give you exact, but
about a BPP.
If you look at the, it'll be probably between $6 and $10 million hit in revenue, but it'll reach about 70,000 individuals and families here in the state of Oregon, of the poorest workers in the state. And if you get $100 tax bill and you're broke, that's a big hit, especially if you have to pay your rent, your light bill, and buy your children food. So, I think this is a very good thing for workers. It'll pour money right back into the economy, and I urge your vote, Mr. Representative.
Representative Kitts, follow up.
I'm having a little heartburn over this, Mr. Chairman, but because of my good friend carrying the bill, I think that the bigger point that I wanted to point out was that Representative Holvey didn't think that $10 million was a lot of money, and I was just going to bring that up at a later point in time, but I'll bring it up now for the record.
Did you?
The spread was 6 to 10.
Somewhere. Exactly. Well, in that case, now I understand.
Yeah. Is there any other discussion?
I won't answer.
Katie, will you call the roll, please?
Representative
Bastel.
Aye.
Representative
Gilman.
Aye.
Good bill.
Aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries. I'll open a work session on House Bill 2056. And Janet, please tell us what we're doing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2056 was introduced at the request of the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. We had a hearing on this bill last week. It establishes a one-time new non-refundable initial application fee of $400 for Oregon Liquor Control Commission licenses in addition to the current license fee. It would allow a waiver of the new fee by the commission. The bill also changes renewal periods for licenses from 1 to 2 years and doubles the license fees to cover the longer period. It expands eligibility for a temporary letter of authority privileges. Mr. Chair, that you discussed at the last meeting also the Dash 2 amendments, which limit a city or county authority to adopt time and place and manner regulations on businesses licensed to sell alcohol. It limits that to regulation of nuisances occurring on the licensed premises. Mr. Chair, in the testimony, the $400 fee was supported by licensees. And the Dash 2 amendments were supported by retailers. The Dash 2 amendments were, the City of Portland expressed concerns about the Dash 2 amendments for at least two reasons. The City of Portland has concerns about the limiting the time, place, and manner restrictions. They also have a concern because the fees for local government review of applications going from the 1 to 2 year renewal period for licensees, the legislation does not increase the city's ability to raise their fee that they collect for reviewing applications. So that would reduce their ability to enforce. They would have to cut some of their program for enforcement. So those are the two, and these are the statutes that have that local fee in them.
Thank you, Janet.
So that was the testimony last week.
Oh, no.
This bill does have a referral to the Ways and Means Committee.
These are Dash 2. Was there Dash 1s? Or?
No.
Someplace. Huh?
Somewhere in the building.
Okay. That pass was on down. Representative Esquivel.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I recommend that we adopt the Dash 2 amendments on 2056.
Representative Esquivel moves that we adopt the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2056. Any discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection? They are adopted. Representative Esquivel.
Yes, we'd like to carry this forward and recommend that we take it to the floor with a D-pass recommendation.
It goes to Ways and Means.
Oh, it goes to Ways and Means? Uh-huh. I don't have that paperwork. Why don't I have that paperwork? Okay, I recommend that we go to Ways and Means, subsequent referral, and we'll go ahead and refer that with the Dash 2 amendment attached.
Representative Esquivel moves that House Bill 2056, as amended, be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to be voting for this bill today, but I want to make it very clear for the record that the industry has come and strenuously, adamantly advocated for this fee increase. And that's why I'm voting for it today, because the industry is what wants this fee increase. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Any other discussion? Representative Gibbs.
Is it a fee increase or is it a new fee? The $400 is a new fee, isn't it? So Representative Stoffer is voting for a new fee, not a fee increase, for the record.
And for the record, Mr. Chair, the industry strenuously advocated for and asked for this new fee. That's why I'm voting for it today.
Janet, can we move the placard support next time? Any other discussion?
Taxing
spenders. Seeing none. Hey, Katie, will you call the roll, please?
Representative Gilman.
Aye.
Representative Colby.
Aye.
Representative Kitts.
Aye.
Representative Chalmers.
Aye.
Representative Stone.
Aye.
Representative Estevan.
Aye.
Chair Brown.
Aye. Motion carries.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Kitts.
Could you place that on the consent calendar?
It's headed for Ways and Means.
Oh.
Thank
Sorry.
You.
Then we probably shouldn't do that.
Representative Kitts and I are really on top of this bill.
How many doesn't start for their 8 minutes, I'll have you know.
Okay, I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2604. Janet, again, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2604 was the bill that was introduced at the request of the Oregon Association of Realtors. Representative Kitts was the chief sponsor. The bill makes a number of changes that affect the licensing of real estate and escrow agents. The hearing was held on March 18th. There were a number of real estate agents that came and testified regarding disciplinary actions taken by the board. There have been meetings since that meeting because concerns were expressed by the real estate commissioner about the bill. And Representative Kitts, there are dash one and dash two amendments that are both being proposed to the bill. They clarify that misrepresentations to any person, not just a member of the public, are grounds for license sanction. They add fraud and dishonest conduct as grounds for sanctions. And they replace the new language that was in Section 5 regarding investigations and progressive sanctions with specific rulemaking direction to the board. Mr. Chair, there's representatives of both the industry and the commissioner's office here. I understand there was a paragraph left out of the dash two amendments, and Representative Kitts, the agency and association may be able to address that.
Representative Kitts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I'd like to commend the work group that got together. They worked in a very diligent fashion. We're able to hammer this out probably in a total of 1 hour, consisting of two meetings. So I appreciate the participation from everybody affected. I would ask that the attorney for the realtors, Matt, are you out there? If Matt could come up, there was in the drafting of the amendments, Mr. Chair, there was one line left out that Matt's going to go over, and I would ask the committee to pay attention to what Matt says, because I'm going to ask for a conceptual amendment to be made now, as opposed to sending this back to LC to bring back to the committee. It's a very minor change, but I just want the committee to know that's what my intentions are. So, if you can guide the committee through the motion that I'm going to make, that would be great.
Thank you. Chairman Brown, members of the committee, Matt Farmer, General Counsel for the Oregon Association of Realtors. This section that was the result of negotiation with the real estate agency, the language that we finally agreed on came from the real estate agency and included in what is Section 2A now, the dash 2 amendments, the idea that when an investigator invests facts, that they report those facts back to the commissioner without their own opinion of violations or grounds for discipline, so that we get just the facts at that point. The concept then that was in what we agreed to was would be after the word facts in the line 15 there, a parenthetical that would say without conclusions of violation or grounds for discipline. That's the part that was left out.
Could I get you to state that again so we got it very plainly on the record?
On line 15, after the word facts, the parenthetical expression, without conclusions of violation or grounds for discipline, so that it's made clear that the investigator is reporting the facts of his investigation and not forming his own opinion of...
That was violation or...
Slowly. Yes.
Slowly, a third time.
Okay, we're going to write this down. Without conclusions of violation or grounds for discipline.
That's right here, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Schaffer.
Thank you. Were these words discussed in the group, in work group?
This was the language proposed to us by the commissioner.
Everybody in the room was okay with this, correct?
That's
the union, the department,
yes.
The stakeholders.
Could do we have somebody from the agency here today?
Yeah. Okay. I just want it on the record.
Rebecca? Yeah. Could you come up here, please? give us your name and for the record.
Thank you, Chairman.
Then a nod of the head or shake of the head.
Thank you, Chairman Brown and members of the committee. I'm Becky Osborne. I'm the Regulation Division Manager for the agency. And Mr. Farmer is correct. That was in the language that we had agreed on and shared. I don't think there's any surprise to the agency about that. So I don't believe we have any difficulty with it.
All right. Thank you. Representative Chaffler.
Mr. Chair, I have no difficulty with it either. I just want both you nice people to say on the record that the unions were okay with this language at the work group. To the best of your knowledge.
To the best of my knowledge, the union expressed no concerns with this language.
Thank you.
And if I might, I'm sorry.
Okay.
To the chair and to the committee, we did send this language off to Mr. Powell, who appeared at our last convening, and he indicated that he and his folks were fine with it, so I did want to reflect that for the record, and that was in the original version prior to the omission.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Kitts?
Committee, I apologize. The language that Matt is speaking of is language that was brought to the work group. I don't know that you have that language. It was brought to the work group and agreed upon at the work group in the drafting of the amendments.
This one sentence. It's that thick. I must have it in there.
Exactly.
I'm sure I have something in here that'll cover
that. I know that Representative Schaffler thinks I get a little sneaky sometimes, but this was no sneak intended. So
for good reason.
I appreciate that. Appreciate you guys.
Oh, some more stuff.
Thank you, folks. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Chair.
Representative Kitts.
I guess I would propose a conceptual amendment. Okay. Janet?
Line 15.
Well, I'm wondering, do I propose the amendment? I'm wondering if this is addressed in either the dash one or the dash two, or if I have to conceptually amend the 2604 in its original form, but then move
the motion.
Mr. Chair, the changes on line 15 is my understanding of the dash two amendment.
Right.
Correct. So, Mr. Chair, I would move conceptually that we change the dash two amendments to read on line 15, following facts without conclusion or violation or conclusion of violation or grounds for discipline.
Representative Kitts moves a conceptual amendment adding to line 15. What he said.
Without conclusion of violation or grounds for discipline.
I think the conclusion is plural.
I think conclusions were plural.
Yeah, conclusions, yeah. Okay. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, we've amended that. Line 15.
Mr. Chair?
Janet.
I just don't want the committee to get in the habit of doing this, but Legislative Council did talk to the Jana this morning and said that it would be okay to do this in the meeting since it was part of the original request.
Okay. Thank you, Janet.
We've been lucky. It's well within our prerogative to conceptually amend any amendment that we so choose.
Correct. Representative Kitts.
Mr. Chair, I would move the dash one amendments into House Bill 2604.
Representative Kitts moves the dash one amendments to 2604. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Representative Kitts.
Mr. Chair, I would move the dash two amendments as conceptually amended into House Bill 2604.
Representative Kitts moves the dash two amendments to House Bill 2604 as amended to the amendments. Is there any discussion? Seeing none. Any objection? None. Representative Kitts.
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 2604 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Kitts moves House Bill 2604 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Seeing none, Katie, please call the roll.
Aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Kitts.
I would move 2604 to the consent calendar.
I object, Mr. Chair.
We better talk about it. I will remember that, Mr. Chair.
Representative Kitts, would you like to carry the bill on the floor?
I would love to explain this bill on the floor.
Thank you, Representative
Kitts. I was trying to be sneaky there. For the record.
I would like to thank Representative Kitts for the work that he's put on this. Great job.
Thank you.
And thank everyone else that was involved. Really appreciate it. And with that, we're done with those. We're going to, committee, the 2669 will be pulled. We won't hear that today. And so we'll open with a public hearing on House Bill 2096. Janet?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2096 was introduced at the request of the Real Estate Agency. It makes a number of technical and grammatical changes throughout the real estate and escrow licensing laws. A couple of the things it does specifically are adding a definition of sole practitioner, deleting a requirement that licenses be returned to the agency when changes are made to allow for more online transactions, adds a requirement for fingerprints and criminal background checks for initial licensing, allows a non-licensed real estate manager who is an employee of a real estate broker to discuss certain financial matters relating to management of real estate law with an owner without being licensed. It allows the real estate agency to adopt guidelines for closing the businesses of a deceased or incapacitated person, and it clarifies what the fees are for branch offices and for address changes. There's a dash one amendment that's fairly extensive, allowing additional rulemaking to give a real estate broker more flexibility regarding business name registrations, and making additional technical changes. Mr. Chair, the representatives of the agency to explain the bill or answer questions.
Thank you, Janet. Could I have Brian DeMarco, please? Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Chair Brown, members of the committee. My name is Brian DeMarco. I'm the manager for land development and policy coordination for the Oregon Real Estate Agency. House Bill 2096 amends the Oregon Real Estate License Law, Chapter 696. Generally, the bill makes technical changes to reconcile discrepancies in statutes. It corrects grammar, and it implements some legislative council suggested changes. There are several minor additions to the statutory scheme. The agency has worked closely with the major stakeholders involved. We have had detailed discussions since late last year, and these stakeholders have included the Oregon Association of Realtors, the Portland Metro Association of Building Owners and Managers, the Institute of Real Estate Management and the Commercial Association of Realtors for Oregon and Southwest Washington. To our knowledge, there's no opposition to this bill. However, I would like to reserve time if somebody comes behind me and raises some questions. As I noted, the dash amendments do make technical changes. There are no major policy implications. There's no major fiscal impact. If you would like, I could go through line by line, page by page, and not necessarily bore you, maybe enlighten you.
Please don't.
Each of the proposed changes. However, I think it would be more expedient to just listen to what questions you may have on specific provisions of the bill and of the dash amendment. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Representative Esquivel.
Yes, I'm just reading the brief because, of course, the size of this bill is pretty, it's a housekeeping bill. It says allows a non-licensed real estate manager who is employee of the real estate broker to discuss financial matters relating to management of real estate with an owner. give me an example of that. Is that like the coordinator, the assistant, or what are you talking about?
It should be the on-site manager, generally.
The on-site manager.
The on-site residential manager, generally, in an apartment building of some sort. And essentially what was happening, the law as it was written precluded them from discussing even rental negotiations, anything like that, without the owner being present or without the licensed property manager being present. And members of the industry came to us and said this would give the industry a little bit leeway when they're dealing with their on-site managers who could express to the potential renters possible rent increases and other financial implications. Mm-hmm. It was to allow a little more flexibility.
Follow up. Should we not then also have terminology in here expressly for a property manager, because now it's written it's just a broker?
The definitions themselves for property manager, for real estate broker, encompass the licensed property manager. So these provisions apply to all professional property management licenses.
So there's something else that says we have brokers and property managers, because they are not the same.
That is correct. But the way it is written, I understand, and through conversations with legislative counsel, it is incorporated.
Okay. Any other questions? Janet, do you have?
Chair, Representative Esquivel, that change is in the bill, is on page 7. Lines 12 and 13, if you want to look at the actual language. It does say employed by a real estate, beginning in line 8, says employed by a real estate broker or principal real estate broker.
Yeah, well, my question was, is the terminology of real estate broker, because a property manager is different, completely different than a real estate broker. That was my question. Where does it outline that they are different? Because this is saying one thing, and they are different.
Okay, is there any other questions? Don't see any. Thank you, sir. Is there anyone else that would like to testify on House Bill 2096? And then I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2096 and open a work session on House Bill 2096. Representative Esquivel.
I move that we adopt 2096 on Amendment 1 to 2096.
Representative Esquivel moves that we adopt the Dash 1 amendments to 2096. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, the Dash 1s are adopted. Representative Esquivel.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I recommend that we move 2096 to the House floor as amended with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Esquivel moves House Bill 2096 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? There's, Katie, please call the roll.
Representative Kitts.
Aye.
Representative
Chaffler. Aye.
Representative
Gilman. Aye.
Representative
Gilman. Aye.
Representative
Colby. Aye.
Chair
Brewer. Aye. Motion carries.
I think that could almost be for the Senate calendar.
I think so. Yeah. Representative Esquivel moves that House Bill 2096 be placed on the consent calendar. Is there any objection? Seeing none, it's placed on the consent calendar. We're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2294, Janet.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2294 was introduced at the request of the Joint Interim Committee on the Judiciary for the Oregon State Bar Workers' Compensation Section. It clarifies procedures relating to workers' compensation claims for new or omitted medical conditions and establishes hearing rights for orders that are issued under what is known as own motion authority of the Workers' Compensation Board. Mr. Chair, the bill is the result of some confusion that's resulted and what the parties claim is overly difficult a process to go through with the Oregon Workers' Compensation section of the bar. So they're here to explain the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Janet. Can I have Thad Heddle?
Yes, correct.
Oh, right there.
I'm here.
Go ahead, sir.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Thad Heddle, and I'm appearing today on behalf of the Workers' Compensation section of the Oregon State Bar in at least partial support of 2294. Basically, our section is a statewide group consisting of practitioners in workers' compensation law. And the committee I'm part of is made up of attorneys that work both for the worker and also for employers and insurers. And generally speaking, that we don't agree on anything unless there's pretty much agreement on both sides. What we're proposing here today is mostly concerning with some changes to the way claims are processed, and we're trying to make them a great deal more efficient. Basically, what happens right now is when you have a workers' compensation claim and it's closed, after a five-year period, it falls into what's referred to as own motion jurisdiction. So the procedure for getting benefits changes somewhat. So basically, after 2001, the Workers' Compensation Board interpreted some statutes to conclude that they had sole jurisdiction over deciding how claims were reopened under own motion, these after five-year deals. So what happens for insurers and claimants is that we have to make a kind of a recommendation to the Workers' Compensation Board. The board then refers it back to the hearings division, and ultimately you can get what they call a proposed and final order. Before that, all we did simply was a claim was made to the insurer or the employer, and the employer would say yes or no, and if the worker wasn't happy, they would go to the hearings division. We'd have a hearing just like we did on every other case. So basically what this is doing is kind of putting it back where it was, that when a worker whose claim is in this own motion area, which deals with the kind of benefits it can receive, they can still have a normal hearing just like a worker with a current workers' compensation claim. It's simply way more efficient. I've had numerous hearings where we end up having two or three orders just because of the fact you've got this strange kind of anomaly that has to go through the board. So it's mostly just an efficiency type deal that I think it benefits both the insurers, employers as well. There's also a second part of the provision in here that deals with appeals, permits appeals to the Court of Appeals. Right now, if you get one of these own motion orders, the ALJ or administrative law judge issues basically a kind of a recommendation, and the board issues an order, and then there are limitations placed on the ability of the party to appeal to the Court of Appeals. And it was the consensus of our committee that's just inappropriate, that there's really, that's almost an anomaly in the law. I think it dates back to the time when the Court of Appeals had de novo review of all facts or whatever, and they were trying to limit these benefits. But it seemed to the committee pretty evident that if someone's aggrieved by an error of law, they ought to have a chance to get that corrected at the Court of Appeals. And that's really the two aspects of what we're talking about here today, is basically just to make the system more efficient, keep it the same way it is for all claims. And the second part is simply to permit appeals from the Workers' Compensation Board to the Court of Appeals, just like we do in all other claims. I note in the bill, in House Bill 2294, I say we partially support it because since that time there's been amendments made with regard to the definition of essential functions and regular work, and that was never before our committee, and we aren't taking any position on that.
We don't have any amendments, is there? Oh. Some out there someplace?
Well, I guess there's groups proposing it. I'm sorry.
Okay.
You don't need to worry about it.
What's the makeup of your group that was putting this forward?
Yes, Chair Brown. The makeup of the group is basically about half. It's about eight attorneys, and it's usually about half defense attorneys that work for insurers and self-insured employers, and half are the claimants for injured workers. As I say before, we don't usually get consensus so much on the substantive things, but on procedural issues like this, where it's just hard on all sides, it works pretty well, I think.
Thank you. Any questions, Representative Schaffler?
Thank you. Has this been through MLAC?
Yes, it has been through MLAC. With regard to this portion of the bill, and as I understand it, I understand that MLAC is okay with the first part about the about permitting a hearing straight, from the hearings division without going through the board and the recommendation section. But I understand that they still are reserving some issues on whether or not they think it should go to the Court of Appeals. They should have a right of appeal.
Mr. Chairman, just to clarify.
Representative Johnson.
So it has not been approved by MLAC.
The portion of the bill as that I'm talking about, I guess I thought it had, but I understood today someone has mentioned to me now that there are some reservations.
Representative, I think that it has been to MLAC, but they haven't put it out with their approval yet. Any other questions? Don't see any. Thank you, sir, for your testimony. Is there anyone else here to testify on House Bill 2294? If not, we're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2294 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2717. Janet?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2717 was introduced by this committee earlier this session and requires that a postponed workers' compensation hearing be held not later than 120 days from the original hearing date. The original bill has an emergency clause on it and would take effect on passage. You should have at your place, we emailed them to your office yesterday afternoon because we got them after distribution of the packet, but you should have the dash 4 amendments. So let me know if you don't have those at your place. And the dash 4 amendments provide that if the hearing is postponed for purposes of joining one or more parties, the 120-day maximum that's in the original bill, the postponement maximum does not apply. Secondly, it increases the 10-day periods required for notice of a hearing. In current law, increases that period to 60 days, but provides that the 60-day notice may be waived by agreement of the parties and of the board. And the other thing that dash 4 amendments do is delete the emergency clause. Mr. Chair, there's people here to explain the bill.
Thank you, Janet. Can I have Sean Miller and Chuck?
Lundeen,
okay.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Sean Miller, representing Liberty Northwest. Here today in support of House Bill 2717, along with the dash 4 amendments that Janet has referenced. Just want to let you know that the House Bill 2717, along with the components in the dash 4 amendments, have been considered and approved by the Management Labor Advisory Committee last Thursday. And here today to explain why we brought this particular bill forward, which again both management and labor both support, is Mr. Chuck Lundeen, Vice President and General Counsel of Liberty Northwest. So at this point, Mr. Chair, I'd like to just turn it over to Chuck to explain.
Thank you, Sean.
Good morning, Chair Brown, members of the committee. I am Chuck Lundeen with Liberty Northwest. House Bill 2717 deals with a problem in the workers' comp litigation system, and that is postponed cases. The statutory section is 656283. Currently, that section provides that the board must set a hearing when a worker requests a hearing, typically, although an employer rarely, those folks can request hearings also. But a worker is typically contesting some benefit issue, a denial of benefits, or some component of his claim. The board is required in the statute to set a hearing within 90 days of that request for hearing. Hearings are not supposed to be postponed, according to the statute and case law. except in extraordinary circumstances. Despite that language, a large number of hearings are postponed. The board tells us up to, in a given month, a third of all cases are postponed. What happens then is unfortunate. There is nothing in the statute today which dictates when one of these postponed cases must be reset so that the worker and the employer can get back before the hearings division. It may be that a new condition has arisen or some witness hasn't shown up, or, you know, there are reasons for postponements, but these cases then languish. Currently, there are over 500 cases waiting for a new hearing date, so workers and employers are waiting between 6 to 10 months, sometimes up to a year, for a new hearing date. This means workers wait a year or more for a decision on their benefits question or not getting paid benefits, which maybe rightly due them. It means employers who have witnesses waiting and kind of this litigation in process, who have frequently posted reserves on these claims, tied up economic resources in this litigation process, are waiting for a decision. Those resources could be used in their business to create jobs. What 2717 does is put a firm 120-day deadline in the statute so that the board must reset these cases at the 120-day mark. We believe this facilitates the fast, fair delivery of benefits, kind of this no-fault system that the workers' comp litigation is supposed to be. It's not supposed to be civil court where people frequently wait a year or two for a decision. As to the amendments, there was a lot of discussion. We've talked to the board about this. We've talked with the trial bar and the plaintiff's bar and other defense lawyers. One question was, could we get a second postponement? And while we believe there are too many postponements, frankly, from our perspective, yes, the answer is there could be, in an extraordinary circumstance, a second postponement. Someone doesn't like their lawyer, there's friction, that sort of thing. Line 17, at least in my set of amendments, which Ms. Atkins talked about, there is a process for multi-party hearings. This is where there's four or five employers. Hearing loss claim would be a good example where lots of people are joined. The statute deals with how those cases are to proceed. There, frequently it takes a long time to get all those people together and sort out the issues. That the 120 days doesn't apply to those cases. The emergency clause is deleted. That was done at the board's request to allow a more, measured phase-in of this new process. And finally, there was a concern expressed about this 10 days notice provision, sub 5 of the statute, of the subsection, which tells the parties that the board can set a hearing on 10 days' notice. Practitioners feel that's not enough time to get a case at issue, and there was an amendment proposed at MLAC, which we agreed with, to put a 60-day rule on this notice provision. Sometimes the boards, even though they have this 90 days to set a hearing and so on, a notice can come out late, so there's a very compressed time frame for people to get sometimes complex cases prepared. So the thought was to put a 60-day notice in, but if the parties agree that they want an earlier hearing and the board can put them in a slot on the docket, that they can waive the 60 days notice. So you don't have to have a 60-day waiting period, but in most cases that would be appropriate, we felt. So that's really what the bill does. I think there's broad agreement that this is a good change that will push these cases forward.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Schaffer. Or Schaffer.
He's getting good. Go ahead.
Look this way. Gently, you're first.
Okay.
No. Representative Escobar.
Okay. So this is actually what you're saying is a 60-day period of required notices on or before 60 days.
I think that's right.
Is that correct?
There's a 90-day. They have to set it within 90 days, but a notice has to come out within 60 days. So yes, you're right.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? Don't see any. Thank you.
Thank you.
Could I have Randy Elmer, please?
Good you. Good morning, Chair. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Randy Umer. I'm a local practicing attorney. I've represented injured workers for in excess of 22 years. I just wanted to appear today to say that I am in support of this bill, and I'm speaking on behalf of the Workers' Comp section of the Oregon Travelers Association, and we are in support of the bill as amended with the Dash 4 amendments. We did have some concerns about some conflicts between our present expedited claim service process that's in the comp system with the original amendments, but the Dash 4 amendments very nicely take care of that conflict and eliminate that. Mr. Lundeen laid out very nicely, I think, the problem, which is that numbers of hearings are delayed. They don't have to be reset on a date certain. It seems to fluctuate depending upon the resources available to the Workers' Compensation Board. So sometimes they get reset quite quickly, but when the board is stretched for resources, it does languish. Cases can languish for up to a year. And we think it is necessary to put some date certain requirements into the statutes for reset hearings. I think the most important amendment that we support wholeheartedly is that the board gives 60 days advance notice of these hearings so that practitioners can put those hearings on their calendars and be prepared when they get there. Shorter notice than that makes it very difficult to practice. So, and I've provided written testimony. So.
Thank you, sir. Any questions? Thank you very much for your testimony. Maureen, would you mind coming up? Yeah.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Schaffler.
It says in here, in your testimony, that you're going to have to add two law judges, administrative law judges. My question is, this doesn't have any, this isn't funded by general funds. Those two judges aren't funded by general funds, are they?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Maureen Bach. I'm the chair of the Workers' Compensation Board. Representative Schaffler, members of the committee, that's true. We are an underfunded agency. Our funding source is entirely from the Premium Assessment Operating Fund.
Okay, any other questions, Maureen? We have her testimony. She'd have given us written testimony that's here in our packets. Thank you.
The one thing I would note for the committee is that there is a provision in law for expedited claim service that would require the board to set cases in 30 days, and that 10-day notice provision allowed us to send out notices to address those cases. The 60-day notice does not address that, so that may be an amendment that could be had on the Senate side.
Any other questions? Thank you very much, Maureen. Is there anyone else here that would like to testify on House Bill 2717? If not, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2717 and open the work session on House Bill 2717. Representative Esquivel.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move that we add the Dash 4 Amendment to 2717.
Representative Esquivel moves the Dash 4 Amendments to House Bill 2717. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, amended. Representative Esquivel.
Yes, I move that we move House Bill 2717 with the Dash 4 amendments to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Esquivel moves House Bill 2717 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, Katie, will you call the roll, please?
Representative
Aye.
Representative
Schiff.
Aye. Representative
Raskin.
Aye. Representative Gilbert.
Excused.
Representative Colby.
Aye.
Representative Kitts.
Excused.
Chair Brown.
Aye. Motion carries. Representative Esquivel will carry the bill on the floor for us, and thank you. Open a public hearing on House Bill 3015. Janet, please begin.
Yes, sir.
Help us with the what the bill does.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
House Bill 3015 was introduced by this committee at the beginning of the session. It modifies the definition of malt beverages for purposes of liquor license control laws. The bill does have an emergency clause. Mr. Chair, there are dash one amendments that delete the new language in the bill and instead include a definition of malt beverage of percentages that the witnesses will explain. The amendments also clarify that beverages like sake are not considered malt beverages, even though they are derived from the fermentation of grain. Mr. Chair, it's my understanding these definitions are consistent with current federal standards and would allow the sale of flavored malt beverages, which currently have to be modified before they can be sold in Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you, Janet. We have Paul Romaine and Rob Douglas.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Rob Douglas. Here today representing Diageo. Some of Diageo's brands include Tanqueray, Bailey's, Cuervo, Crown Royal, Guinness Beer, BV Wines, and Smirnoff Ice. The purpose of House Bill 3015 is to conform Oregon statutes to the new federal definition of flavored malt beverage. Passage of 3015 will allow the sale in Oregon of the same flavored malt beverages that are for sale in other states. We urge the committee to pass House Bill 3015.
Thank you. Paul?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Paul Romaine. I'm an attorney in Portland, and I represent the Oregon Beer and Wine Distributors Association. And Mr. Douglas used the words conformed. I would rather use the word parallel, because each state is independent about how they define what products are sold in a state. Under the 21st Amendment, you have that authority. The genesis of this bill really is the flavored malt beverage product that's out there. For a long time, most people had no idea what was in that flavored malt beverage product, where the source of the alcohol came from. And what we determined early on, or after some study, was actually most of the flavoring for these products actually came from the alcohol in the product came from the flavoring. Now, flavoring is really distilled spirits. Most of your flavors out there are basically about 90% distilled spirits, and that was the source of most of the alcohol in this product, technically not making it a beer, because in the state of Oregon, if malt beverage it can be a malt beverage, but you cannot sell it in the state of Oregon if it has more than 0.5% alcohol from another source other than the fermentation of grain. Now, the long way around this, it became a huge national controversy, and it was a very hot, and still is a fairly hot, commodity out there. Things like Smirnoff Ice, which Diageo has, Mike's Hard Lemonade, Bacardi O, which is a product distributed by the Anheuser-Busch companies. There's a lot of other product out there that if you tasted, you probably would never go back to again, and it's really off the market. But it's a category out there. What we need to do is conform or make Oregon law at least compatible with what the feds have just done, and they just did this in December. They basically allowed for the addition to a malt beverage of alcohol from flavors, as long as that total alcohol was under 6% or 6% or less, and the flavors really constituted about no more than 49% of the alcohol, so it had to be 51-49. That's what the dash one amendments do, and what the actual bill does. The dash one amendments also add a provision on that which is over 6% alcohol. And again, you can have a malt beverage in Oregon up to 14%. Again, it conforms to what the feds allow, which is not more than 1.5% of the overall alcohol content. If it's over 6%, it can be from the flavoring, if you would. And what this does is allow us to sell what is being produced and sold all over the country. Now, the Oregon Liquor Control Commission really did a great job over the last couple of years in interpreting Oregon law and holding the line, because in Oregon they stuck with the definition as they're supposed to. They didn't fudge from it. They didn't try and compromise on the thing. Now that the feds have acted and we know what the national standard is going to be, there really is no policy reason not to conform with the national standard. These drinks are already currently for sale. They're just a little different formulation. They were upwards of 70 to 90% alcohol from the distilled spirit flavoring. Currently, they're less than 10% because of at least within the state of Oregon, because of reformulation, and now they can go up to 49% of the alcohol from these flavors. So we would ask you to adopt the Dash 1 amendments and pass the bill.
Thank you, Paul. Any questions?
Yeah, I have a question, Mr. Chair, please.
Representative Schoenfeld.
The revenue impact may have a revenue impact. What's that all about?
Mr. Chair, Representative Schoenfeld, this probably will not have any revenue impact. The reason is the stuff's already being sold. It's taxed as a malt beverage, as a beer, but it's already sold out there. And all you're doing is changing the formula a little bit. We assume that it's not going to affect sales one way or another. If you don't pass the bill and the product is not available in the state, it will have a negative impact because you won't sell as much stuff.
I have no problem with this bill, but we're in no way, shape, or form increasing any revenue rates for anybody or any product anywhere with this.
Mr. Chair, Representative Schoenfeld, we are not increasing any tax burden on anybody by this bill.
Thank you very much.
Is this sold in liquor stores then, or is it in grocery stores?
Mr. Chairman, it's sold in grocery stores.
Mr. Chair, both. There are products that have more distilled spirits in them that are very similar products. The flavored malt beverage category or the it's actually called the ready-to-drink category, the RTD category. So there are some that are sold in liquor stores that are strictly from distilled spirits, and there are some that are sold in grocery stores. This really just affects that which is sold in grocery stores.
And so a drink that has more than 14% alcohol is sold in a liquor store?
Mr. Chair, it depends on the source of the alcohol. In Oregon, if the source of the alcohol is through fermentation of grain, or fermentation of fruit, wine, then it's sold in a grocery store. If it's distillation, then it's sold in a liquor store. It's a different process of obtaining the alcohol.
So it has nothing to do with the percent of alcohol?
Right? Well, it does to some degree, mainly because the fermentation process sort of has its limits on what the amount of alcohol that you can produce. And in Oregon, if it's over 14%, even though you can produce a malt beverage that's over 14%, there are some that are up to 20-some percent. It's kind of, in beer lore, there's always contests to see who can get the most out of some of these exotic beers. But it can't be sold in Oregon as a malt beverage. There's not a big market for that kind of stuff. Nobody goes around drinking 21% beer unless you're at a brew fest with one of these wacko brewmasters who's gone crazy for a while.
And that's on the record.
Yeah, that's part of the record.
Representative Holby.
I wouldn't say that on the Senate side.
I know. Right. We have one of those down in your neck of the woods.
Any other questions? I don't see any. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else here to testify on House Bill 3015? I don't see any. Did you have a question?
We do not have a revenue impact statement, but
it's
outlined.
Okay. You've requested a revenue impact statement.
Yes.
Okay. Close the public hearing on House Bill 3015. And might as well move it. Huh? Open a work session on House Bill 3015. Do I have a motion? Representative Kitts.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3015 to the floor for the pass recommendation.
The Dash Ones?
I'd move the Dash Ones in first, of course, Mr. Chair. Everybody knows that.
That's what
he's going to
say.
Representative Kitts moves the Dash Ones amendments to House Bill 3015. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? They're adopted. Representative Kitts.
Chair, I move House Bill 3015 as amended to the floor with due pass recommendation.
Representative Kitts moves House Bill 3015 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, Katie, will you call the roll, please?
Aye.
Aye.
Excuse.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Which one? Aye. Motion carries. Need a carrier? Somebody want to explain this?
Consent calendar.
I'll do it.
Representative Shields will carry the bill on the floor. Thank you, Representative.
You can elaborate.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Schaffler.
May I ask we suspend the rules and allow Representative Kitts to vote on House Bill 2717, please?
Representative Schaffler would ask to suspend the rules to allow Representative Kitts to vote on House Bill 2717. Is there any objection? Seeing none, Representative Kitts, how do you vote?
Aye.
Representative Kitts votes aye on House Bill 2717. Janet, is there anything else for the good of the order?
No.
Man, we are
official. Not having no matter how bad your day is, just remember we're not having an evening meeting, so it's not as bad as it could have been.
We're not having an evening meeting?
Tonight?
How are you disappointed?
Well, yeah, why should we have an evening? We got to be here at the crack of dawn. 8 o'clock.
Want me to make an appointment with the chaplain for you?
Yeah, exactly.
Is there anything else?
3 hours, 4 hours.
Right. We are adjourned.
Days. What are you talking about? I'm going to go take a nap.